What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo! Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sort. High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again.
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five.
High Five.
Casino.
Casino.
Win at High Five Casino.
.com. High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back, Coast favorite Dr. Michael Sala, back with us, a pioneer in the development of exopolitics. He's the author of Exposing U.S. Government Policies on Extraterrestrial Life and Exopolitics. A couple of his other books include Kennedy's Last Stand, U.S. Air Force Space Secret Space Program, Shifting ET Alliance and Space Force. It's an amazing story all by together. Dr. Sala was an assistant professor and researcher in residence in the School of International Service at the American University until 2004. He's got a PhD in government from the University of Queensland in Australia, and also the founder of the Exopolitics Institute. Michael, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
I'm well, George. I'm really excited by this new book coming out, and looking forward to catching up again soon at the Contact in the Desert.
Oh, great. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I just had Michael Tellinger on. He's going to be out there, too, so we'll all be out there.
Oh, that'll be fun.
And we're going to celebrate my birthday a little bit later on that day and the weekend.
Perfect.
So we'll do that. So tell me more about the Secret Space Program. In your opinion, what is it exactly?
Well, the Air Force has been secretly studying retrieved extraterrestrial craft from the 1940s. Many people have heard of the Roswell crash.
Yep.
There are other crashes that happened before that are not as well known. One in particular that happened in Los Angeles in 1942, I think, was very important because that time in 1942, just after the U.S. entered into the Second World War, a major aviation companies were all located in Los Angeles. So they all saw that Los Angeles air raid incident and that UFO. And even though, you know, their priority was obviously in building bombers and fighter craft for the Army Air Force for the war effort, there was nevertheless a secret effort to understand where these technologies came from, who the pilots were, and whether extraterrestrial life was visiting us. And that was something that some of the most senior Air Force leaders of the time, in particular General Hap Arnold, who was a five-star general, actually the only five-star general to have served with both the U.S. Army and the U.S. Air Force.
He goes back so far, Michael, he was trained in flying by the Wright brothers.
Well, that's right. He was a test pilot for the Wright brothers, you know, back in the early 1910, or something like
way
that.
Way back. Yeah.
So he was a pioneer, and the interesting thing is that he was a pioneer in the innovation of aircraft, and he was also the person who laid the foundations for the Air Force to enter into a new era, which was to learn as much as it could about these craft that were being retrieved from all over the place and to reverse engineer them as far as possible. And so Arnold set the process in place. He was working with major aviation companies such as the Douglas Aircraft Company. And Donald Douglas, the person who started up the Douglas Aircraft Company, his daughter was married to Hap Arnold's son, so they were very close. And what happened was Douglas set up within the Douglas Aircraft Company a top secret think tank to study some of these retrieved craft. And in 1945, that was funded by Arnold using surplus army funds to the tune of about $10 million at the time, which today translates to well over $100 million or several hundred million. So it was an enormous amount of money. And this was all to study exactly what was behind the UFO phenomenon and to study retrieved extraterrestrial craft. So this was something that the Army Air Force was pursuing during the Second World War, along with companies like the Douglas Aircraft Company. And this was eventually led to the creation of the RAND Corporation. So first you have in 1945 the creation of the RAND Project, and in 1948 you have it separating from Douglas and becoming the RAND Corporation. And that has, to this day, been really one of the key institutions studying this whole extraterrestrial phenomenon and how the Air Force should respond to it.
And Hap was behind all of this, wasn't he?
He was the one that got it started. He provided the funds, and he was the one that realized that this was a new era, just as the Wright brothers ushered in a new era, and he was a part of that. He recognized this, the new era that the Air Force would have to deal with would not be the aviation industry as such. It would be these spacecraft. And so that was something that he pioneered. And in fact, the very first paper hypothesizing or discussing the development of the world's first flying saucer or the first orbital spacecraft was put out by the RAND Project, and that appeared in 1946, and that was the one that really got the Air Force going down this track of understanding how important space was for its future operations and to start to develop the craft for space deployment. And that was happening in the 1940s, so that was over 70 years ago.
Why did they decide to keep it secret, including Roswell back in 1947?
I think there are many reasons why they decided. I mean, there's ones that many people have talked about, which is disclosing the truth about these anti-gravity technologies using free energy sources would basically gut the petrochemical industry, and the U.S. economy would be basically revolutionized, and a lot of wealthy people stood to lose a lot of money. So that was one of the major reasons. But I think probably the most powerful reason was that the U.S. National Security apparatus had no real answer to what was going on with the flying saucer phenomenon. I mean, they understood that we were being visited, that craft were crashing, that there were different extraterrestrial races involved in all of this. But to kind of like understand it all and to present to the public all this data without knowing exactly, well, are these extraterrestrials to be trusted? Are they foes? Are they? And what about the Germans? The Germans set up something in Antarctica. Do we reveal that? So I think at the end of the day, they decided that secrecy was the best course until they could find a way to reveal all this to the general public without causing either a kind of economic collapse or a societal collapse.
And they're still keeping it secret.
Well, they have tried to disclose. I mean, it's not been a monolithic thing. I mean, the Air Force has been, over the years, been involved in a number of disclosure initiatives. I mean, people have talked about how they were encouraged by the Air Force to do some kind of disclosure announcement or a film. I mean, I'm thinking of Robert Emenegger's film in the 1970s, where he was basically tasked by the Air Force to put together a disclosure video. But in the end, they didn't give him the film that from their archives showing these flying saucers landing at Holloman Air Force Base. So the Air Force has, in fits and bursts, tried to reveal the truth, but it's always been kind of like one step forward, two steps back type thing. But now with this Space Force, I think we are getting really close now, because ultimately any sensible person is going to ask, well, why is the U.S. developing a Space Force if we've only got satellites up there?
Well, that's true, too. Now, there was another player who came on the scene, General Curtis LeMay. Tell us about his involvement.
Well, he was a very important figure because he was the guy that was very much involved in setting the agenda in terms of the research and development of the retrieved Roswell craft. So he was the person in charge of research and development for the U.S. Air Force, or at the time it was called the Army Air Force. It became the renamed the Air Force mm-hmm. in September 47. So the Roswell crash happened in July of 47. So he set it all up, and over the years he continued to play a key role in trying to help the Air Force get on top of these captured craft. He became the Air Force Chief of Staff, and there was an incident. I know you've had David Adair on, but
yes, many times.
He's talked about how he was taken to Area 51, and he was basically asked to work out the propulsion system for this huge extraterrestrial craft, based on his work on a smaller propulsion system for his own rocket. And he said that the person that was instrumental in that was Curtis LeMay. So, you know, right there you have, you just, you know, even during his retirement, Curtis LeMay continued to play this pioneering role, or this critical role, in helping the Air Force understand, you know, what the heck was behind the flying saucers. You know, what kind of propulsion system did they use? You know, how did navigation work? What was the importance of the pilot in all of that? And so these were sort of really critical questions. And the Air Force did make progress right up until the 60s and 70s in understanding these technologies and getting some of these captured technologies to fly again. Bill Uhouse was an Air Force engineer, and he says that in the 50s and the 60s, that one of the captured craft from the Kingman, Arizona crash, I think that was in 1948, that was in such good condition after the crash that the Air Force was able to repair it and use it as a model for setting up a flight simulator for Air Force pilots to fly flying saucers. So this was something that he said was happening in the 50s and 60s. He was involved in that. That was Bill Uhouse. And then you have the remarkable testimony of people like Brad Sorensen and Mark McClandish, who say that in the 1980s, the Air Force had its own operational flying saucers, and that they saw three of these being shown at an air show.
Wow.
At Edwards Air Force Base in 1988.
Was it based on reversed UFO technology, Michael?
Absolutely. That was exactly what they did. They used the principles they gained from the captured extraterrestrial craft and also what the Germans had developed during the Second World War. And and just to give the listeners an idea of exactly how many craft were being studied, several sources say that at Area 51, that there were 9 flying saucers that were in storage there that were being studied by the Air Force and by the different aircraft companies such as Lockheed. 5 of them were extraterrestrial in origin, and 4 of them were German.
I was going to say, I've always heard stories that the Germans may have been even more ahead of us in this kind of area.
They definitely were. They began in the 1920s studying these kinds of principles.
Did they have a retrieved saucer?
The first retrieved saucer was in 1933. That was in Italy. That was Modena, Italy. But the Germans actually used esoteric sources to get information about the flying saucer phenomenon.
Now, what's an esoteric saucer?
An esoteric source like Maria Orsic and the Vril Society. These were ladies that claimed that they were able to communicate with extraterrestrials, and also some of the ancient texts found in places like India that described the Vimanas. So the Germans were studying all of this in the 1920s, trying to get to the bottom of it, and they made tremendous progress, so that by the 1940s they'd gotten so far ahead that they actually tried to operationalize some of these flying saucer craft. But just as the Messerschmitt 261 jet fighter was deployed towards the end of the Second World War, but it was too late. I mean, the Allies had kind of broken the back of the German military might, and so even these advanced craft that they were able to get up there were just too few of them to combat, 1,000 bomber raids.
Did they fly them over the United States?
That happened later. That happened in the soon after the Operation High Jump expedition in Antarctica, when Admiral Byrd led that naval expedition down there. And there have been lots of rumors of a battle down there with the German flying saucers that basically dealt the Navy a bloody nose back in early 1947.
The war was already over.
That's right, yes, because... The Navy understood that the Germans had succeeded in building underground bases in Antarctica, and so that was the real purpose behind Operation High Jump. But what also happened was that after the Navy suffered casualties, and so it ended that mission early, Admiral Byrd went to Chile and gave a speech where he warned of a new enemy that could fly from pole to pole very, very rapidly, and that the U.S. had to face this. Well, only 3 months later, you had the Kenneth Arnold sighting in Washington State, and he saw 9 crescent-shaped craft flying in formation, and I believe, and this is what I argue in the book, and I present the data that I was able to find in support of this, that these craft were actually German craft that were deployed from Antarctica that began overflights of the U.S.
Wow.
And the goal was not to fight the U.S. The goal was to basically convince the U.S. military that the Germans had succeeded in understanding the principles behind flying saucer technologies, anti-gravity, torsion field physics, all of these advanced concepts that the Air Force knew were vital to being able to fly and reverse engineer these craft. The Germans were demonstrating that they had succeeded in that, and they were basically indicating that we want to negotiate. We want to partner in reverse engineering these craft and building fleets of them, and so let's make a deal.
And I guess they wanted to do it before the Soviet Union picked up on it, right?
Well, the Soviets were always very anxious over this possibility that the United States could enter into an alliance with the German breakaway colonies in Antarctica. That was the Soviets' greatest fear, because the Soviets knew that they had nothing that could match what the Germans had developed down in Antarctica. And they knew that if the U.S. partnered with the Germans, that the U.S. would qualitatively move way ahead of the Russians. And that's exactly what happened.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah.
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your high-five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like...
Whoa.
And...
Hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
What are you looking for in a new smart TV? 4K picture quality? High quality and immersive sound? A sleek design? All of those are givens, but only the new Roku Pro Series has all of those and the Roku streaming experience and award-winning OS. Get fast, easy access to all your apps like iHeart, where you can stream all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all day. And regular all-inclusive trips to Roku City. The new Roku Pro Series. A smart TV built by the streaming pros.